The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now, the government has confirmed that they are looking at appropriate interventions to address rising fuel costs, which will be finalised at Cabinet next Tuesday. In a moment, though, we will be speaking with Michael Fitzmaurice from the opposition about what he would like to see done. But joining me up now is Dr. Paul Dean, Senior Lecturer in Clean Energy Futures at UCC. Good evening to you, Paul. We really are in crisis mode here in terms of what's going to happen in global energy terms, aren't we?
Unfortunately, we are indeed, Ciara. Look, and we need to do something, and we need to do something quickly. I'm down here in West Cork today. I was just driving around this afternoon, and in my local petrol station, diesel is now at €2.15, and many people are seeing the same kind of incredible, remarkable prices really around the country. Now, when we look at the price of petrol and diesel, you know, we often think of oil and we think of countries like Saudi Arabia making lots of money from selling oil. But actually, a surprising thing about oil is that governments make more money from taxing oil than oil-producing countries do from selling it. But tax is a huge element of that €2.15. And just to kind of give you a rough idea, Ciara, of the kind of €2.15, roughly about half of it is taxed. There's about a 42-cent charge due to excise. There's about 18 cents for carbon tax. And then there's about 40 cents for VAT. Now, I'm talking about diesel here. So when we look at the price of forecourt petrol and diesel, it's not just the price of the product. Tax is a real significant element of that. And within that tax bracket, there's fixed elements, which is the excise and carbon elements. But then there's a variable element, which changes depending on how what the price of the product is. And ultimately what that means, Ciara, that if the price at the pumps goes up by about 10 cents, that means the tax intake for the government goes up by about 2 to 3 cents. So I think there's definitely a need there to review the tax elements, review the excise duty elements, because okay, we're going at the moment, it's a very difficult
thing. So because taxes is proportional, if the cost of the oil, if the raw material goes up in price, the government is making money off of it, even though the hauliers, the aviators, the everybody going around trying to heat their houses or indeed trying to drive their cars is paying an elevated price that maybe they can't afford. We are in trouble, though, aren't we? The Straits of Hormuz have not been secured. We know that roughly 20% of global oil and gas comes through there. We know how dependent we all are on this. I mean, could we be looking at, in your view, Paul, like another oil crisis like we've seen maybe in previous decades? You know, I'm old enough to remember the 70s with the queues at the petrol stations and my parents saying, oh, such and such a garage has petrol now, we'll go there now.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit too early to say yes here, but it's certainly shaping up that way. You know, all the signs are unfortunately pointing in the wrong direction. You know, the thing always to watch in an energy crisis, it's not just about the flow of oil, which is very important, but also the damage to any infrastructure around that area. Because if the Straits of Hormuz open up next week, or please God, it will open up soon, there has to be oil products there able to flow out of that. And oil, when you take it out of the ground, oil in itself is relatively useless. You have to turn it into something useful, and that's done in these huge refinery complexes. And what we're after seeing, I suppose, in the last week is significant damage to some of the very large refineries for oil in Saudi Arabia. And that's very worrying, because, you know, you can dispatch a tanker and move a ship relatively quickly, but the time it takes to repair a refinery can be months to years. And that would be the thing I would be keeping an eye on over the next few days, next couple of weeks. If there's any more significant damage done to oil infrastructure, that really points in that we could be heading towards a very deep energy crisis, which, as you said, would replicate and echo, I suppose, many of the things that happened in the 70s and again, unfortunately, in the early 80s.
And Paul, the knock-on effects, or is this also too early to say, the knock-on effects when oil supply dwindles and the price of crude oil and indeed refined oil goes up and up and up, the effects economically, we're already in a sort of a uncharted waters with tariffs, etc., currently on a global scale. But when we throw an oil crisis into the mix, we are looking at huge impacts on world economies, aren't we? And potentially, maybe it's a dramatic thing, but global recessions, things like that come off the back of things like this.
We are. And look, and it's not very, it's, you're correct to say that, because that is what happened. That is what has happened in the past. Oil and energy is everything. And we often don't appreciate that until it's gone. We often don't appreciate, I suppose, the reliability of the electricity supply that we have here in Ireland until there's a large storm. we don't appreciate the reliability, I suppose, of stable petrol and diesel prices until they're gone. So it affects everything. Not only does it affect prices, but it really affects people's yeah. well-being, people's physical and mental well-being. We saw this during the Ukrainian crisis, I suppose, the last energy crisis, which unfortunately was 4 years ago. And again, here, that was a fossil fuel crisis. We saw what happens when people don't have the money to heat their homes. You know, that's an incredible lack of dignity, and that affects everything. So mm-hmm. it's not just about prices, it's about people. And I suppose coming into this current crisis that we have at the moment as well, wrapping around that was on an already very difficult cost of living crisis. We have large numbers of the population who just don't have the money to be able to pay their electricity bills or their energy bills. So unfortunately, the outlook isn't very positive at the moment. And I suppose really what we can hope for the best is a relatively quick resolution and the reopening of the straits, and hoping that infrastructure within the Arabian Peninsula and the Persian Peninsula isn't damaged too much, that okay. so when it does become open again, the oil will flow.
And maybe, Paul, lastly, I know you mentioned that taxation is one of the levers that government has to ease the pain for the population, so they can cut things like excise. Maybe they've ruled out cutting the carbon tax. So that might help people. But if supply remains critically, I suppose, restricted because of what we're seeing, do we have any options on that front? Obviously, like in other words, to get it from elsewhere. I know that some of the reserves were, in an unprecedented move, released last week. Russian oil, obviously, and gas is under sanctions currently. But is there any other options out there for Ireland or indeed the EU to seek oil elsewhere?
Not really, unfortunately. You know, we rely so much on the Middle East. About 20% of all the oil that comes into the world comes through the Middle East. So we don't really have options outside of that. And you're right, Kira, like we are kind of heading into, you know, this generation kind of uncharted territory, the shortages of petrol and diesel. You know, hopefully we won't have to revisit those things. We do have strategic stores. We store roughly here about 1 billion euros worth of petrol and diesel and oil products on the island here in Ireland. Now, that is in case of a physical restriction or a physical interruption to supply. International governments have agreed to release some of that supply over the next couple of weeks. Now, that will ease the shock a little bit, but it won't reduce the price. So I think at an international level, everything needs to be done to try and get this conflict to a kind of a peaceful resolution as soon as possible, because there's very few winners other than very large fossil fuel producers. But from a public perspective, I think we're all losing.
And thank you very much for joining us on that. That was Dr. Paul Dean, their senior lecturer in clean energy futures at UCC. We're also joined now by Independent Ireland TD for Roscommon Galway, Michael Fitzmaurice. Good evening to you, Michael. Are you happy with the noises you're hearing from government? They say that they are going to take appropriate actions.
Yeah, well, first of all, appropriate action is needed fairly rapid. It is a good thing that they finally realise, I think, next Tuesday, Kira, is from what I'm hearing, that mm-hmm. they're going to take action. That is welcome, because people are really feeling it at the moment on the price of it, as you've talked earlier on. But there are other things they need to look at as well. I know the 20% of oil, as your previous speaker has spoke, comes there. But Ireland has taken a decision as well as a nation that we'd let no one go drilling or no one, say, of the Ballyroe oil field. And you know, there's fair talk about gas in Mayo, because you must remember we have another bang coming to us down the corner in the line of gas, because gas has gone up, I think something like 112% in price. And that will knock on in time in electricity.
So would you like to see reopened our own gas oil explorations, our own gas oil, some of them now defunct fields? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, if a field is defunct and nothing in it, we would have some areas where there was known to be oil reserves. And I believe that Ireland needs to relook at that, because security of supply, as we have seen, if you're relying on I know it's 20%, but if you're relying on oil coming from other countries and what's going on at the moment, I know it's what has been said earlier in the line, we need a resolution of that war very, very, very.
And what do you say to people who say that would fly in the face of our climate targets, and indeed that our policy here is to move us towards renewable? There's ads on the radio currently from the ESB, you know, opening solar farms, etc.
Yeah, yeah, and you can still open your solar farms, but let's call a spade here. You will need oil for years to come, whether we like that or whether we don't. Some days the wind doesn't blow, and we will need it. And the more we can do of the other in the line of alternative energy, yes, but have to be realistic. And are we going to have our basically left watching a war going on? And as I heard you earlier stating very clearly, I remember it as well, the time that you'd get a gallon of petrol or a gallon of diesel at the pumps in the 70s. And if Ireland had to go back to that, you know the next result. We would have a recession. And if we have a recession, you won't be talking about climate then, or you won't be talking about anything.
And do you think that's a reasonable trade-off, Michael, that in times of economic pressure, we sort of throw our climate change aspirations and our climate targets out the window? Are they luxury beliefs? Is that your view?
Look at Kira. This is an emergency that's happening at the moment. People are hurting. For 2, 3, 4 months, how long this war goes on, is going to determine the pain the people are going through. And if for 2 or 3 or 4 months, if you have to take an alternative route, you do it. And I think that would be very unwise if we didn't do that.
Well, you and I both know that there wouldn't be a gas or oil exploration off the coasts of Ireland that would only take 2 or 3 or 4 months. Those take decades in order to reap profits.
Let's be clear on this, Kira. For the foreseeable future, for the next 20, 30 years, let no one cut themselves. Oil will be needed. Will you better source it close to home and have security? Or will you better to keep looking at people fighting in other countries and push our economy at risk?
So you were saying one of the things that should be considered is the re-establishment of a viable fossil fuel energy industry here in Ireland.
We will need it, Kira, for the next 20 to 30 years. I'm not saying that we have abundance of it, but if there's proof that there is, I hear so many people talking about the Ballyroe at the moment, and there is talk off the Carrabba gas field that there is more gas there. What do we do? Do we say we're the greatest kids in the class and we bring it from some other country, be it America LNG or bring it from somewhere else? Or do we make sure that we have fuel security? I think we need to sort of basically cop on a bit, and especially with the emergencies we've seen. We've seen this 2 or 3 years ago with the Ukraine war.
And I accept that we don't have energy security, and I do believe that it is an issue for the country. I suppose the reality, though, is were we to go back into the Carrabba oil fields, or were we to do any of those kinds of things, you would look at, in terms of decades, how long we would have to explore there and drill there and do all of that in order to recoup the costs of doing so.
Does anybody believe that we can do without a certain amount of fossil fuels in the next 30 years? Anyone that believes that we're going to live without oil for the next 30 years.
And what do you say about the government focus, which is currently on things like bigger fuel rebates, cutting excise, maybe those types of things? Are you saying that those are not adequate?
Well, first of all, the government at the moment, people are hurting. We have to give fuel rebates on the excise duty for the likes of white diesel and petrol. There is no point. And if you look at it, they can monitor it every month. If the war finishes in a month and the price starts dropping, a government can basically rejig. The other sector that we need to look at as well is the agricultural sector, because some of those excise aren't on it. And we need to make sure that there's a rebate given back on the green diesel. And we will also face a situation, and let people not fool themselves into this, with the price of gas at the moment and the amount of electricity that is basically generated from gas, we are going to end up that in dip forward buy. So in a month or 2 months' time, we will end up that electricity prices, in my opinion, will go up. And we have 320,000 people at the moment since December, and that was before this crisis, struggling to pay their ESB bills.
We have 340,000 people in arrears. May I ask you a last question for you, Michael? Obviously, you believe that we need to explore our fossil fuel industry here as well. What do you think should happen with regard to Russian oil? Trump has lifted sanctions on oil in transit on some of the Russian oil.
It won't be what I think will happen. The bottom line
No, what would you like to see happen? What do you believe should happen?
Europe has made a decision. And Europe is going to stand by that decision that they're not going to buy oil from Russia.
Is it the right decision?
Well, whether it's right or wrong, that's the decision they've made now, and that's it. There's no point in re-looking at it. That's what they have made. But what we have done now, we have left ourselves in Europe like an island, to be quite frank about it, that we have, with the war going on in Iran and with the 20% there, with the sanctions, we have left ourselves in a very vulnerable situation where jobs is at stake right throughout Europe. And that is a very worrying situation, because if you get a recession, you won't be talking about climate, you won't be talking about a lot of the things that people are talking about at the moment. You will be talking about people suffering with lack of jobs. We've got to make decisions and make them fast.
Michael Fitzmaurice, TD from Independent Ireland for Roscommon Galway. Thank you for joining us.
Let's stay with the impacts of the war in the Middle East. Another fuel also being affected is aviation fuel, with the continued closure of the Strait of Hormuz potentially affecting supply. We're joined by Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor. Kevin, thanks indeed for joining us. Could we get to a situation where we see shortages of supply and possibly flight cancellations over the coming weeks and months?
It's possible, Shane. Good evening now. This is not good news, really, because let me just give you a little bit of background.
Please.
Aviation turbine fuel is, in fact, a very highly distilled fuel. It's kerosene or paraffin, to be honest. Jet engines run on any liquid fuel, but of course they're tuned to run on paraffin. And it's done by, you know, huge volumes have been used over the years. The price of it now has gone from recently $860 per metric ton to $1,500 in the last two or three days.
Doubled,
so that's
basically
a huge increase. Now, some airlines have hedged their bets, as it were, and booked 3 or 4 months in advance, but they run out over the summer. And the thing I mentioned earlier to some other persons, if it happens that you've got a hedging deal with, you're buying thousands of tons of this stuff off the supplier and they've no supply, it doesn't matter what price you're paying if they can't get it. So there are problems and there are hotspots. For example, last week, Cuba ran out of aviation fuel. That's because of the US blockade, nothing to do with the current war. But in the last few days, Ghana, Thailand and Vietnam, if they haven't run out, they're expected to run out of aviation fuel due to supply problems in the next couple of days. And that means flights can't get in or get out. So they're being cut off from the rest of the world. And it could happen again and again. UK, for example, it distills one third of its own aviation refined fuel, as it were. But most of the rest of it comes from the Middle East, where, of course, the battles are raging. Mm. And the Straits of Hormuz, if they're not broken open and given free passage soon, we are going to have hotspots where there's going to be no fuel at all.
I'm sorry to be parochial about it, but how are we affected in Ireland?
Well, not too badly in the short term. Just to put it into focus, short-haul aircraft survive better because they can uplift, in some cases that I've seen, they can go on three little hops. In other words, they go from point A to B and to C, and they refuel in point C. Sometimes they go as far as point D. They carry enough to get back again. That can't happen in the long haul, because when you look at the volume of fuel they have to uplift, some of the big, fat, wide-bodied aircraft carry between 70 and 100 metric tons of fuel. So they can go one way, they have enough to divert if the airport isn't open, but they'll never get enough to get back again because they simply can't carry it. So that's going to mean consolidation, and it's going to mean real trouble for people who want to go long haul distances in the short term.
Well, and apologies if this is a silly question to ask. Does that mean if you're going to certain locations long haul that don't have a good supply, then those flights are going to be affected?
Yes, and it's a problem for a lot of the airlines, which have got good businesses, both the long-haul airlines in the Middle East especially now, but of course some of them in America, in Africa, in different parts of the world. People go on holidays. This, by the way, is the start of the summer season. So more than ever, more and more people have booked holidays and hope to go flying. We're really at the start of the season. This was going to be one of the busiest years in the history of aviation. So there's going to have to be consolidation. In the Americas, not too bad, because as you know, a man called Mr. Trump has said, drill, baby, drill. Mm. They are self-sufficient in terms of fuel. Where it's going to hit them, though, is the cost, because the petrol and the diesel and the aviation turbine fuel is going to be affected by the world prices. Despite the fact that President Trump says everything is okay, they're going to pay much more for their aviation fuel. And that, too, will lead to consolidation, because some routes will not make money. Some airlines may actually go bankrupt because they can't afford to run and pay the fuel. And it's between 20 and 40%. More more like 40% of the cost of the aviation running at the moment with the fuel the way it is. And there's so much uncertainty. We're not sure where the future is in the next 2 or 3 months. And that's a pity.
It is a lot of uncertainty. Thanks indeed for that expert insight. Kevin Byrne there, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor. Thank you for talking to The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.